You're listening to the Rotoscopers Podcast, Episode 1, The Beauty and the Beast, Time Vortex in the West Wing.
Welcome to the pilot episode of the Rotoscopers Podcast, an animation podcast for animation addicts, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I'm your host, Morgan Burt.
Hi, I'm Chelsea Robson.
And I'm Mason Smith.
Perfect. Okay. This is a podcast that Chelsea and I have been wanting to do forever. We're huge animation fans. And so finally, after years and years and years, we decided to get this going and we decided to call it the Rotoscopers. So, yeah.
I'm pretty excited about it.
And you, Mason?
Oh, definitely.
Okay. So
super excited.
Let's just go and kind of do introductions about ourselves, who we are, what's important about us, why we're here.
I would like to go first. My name is Chelsea Robson and what am I? So I grew up performing and singing, and that's been my passion and basically everything that I do. Why am I here? Well, I love Disney. I love animation. I love music. I love everything about it. And that is just something that it's come to be such a really big part of my life. And so that is one of the main reasons that we are just so excited to be able to talk about what is important to us.
All right. For my introduction, well, my name is Mason Smith. I am a student of animation at Brigham Young University. I was basically raised on the Disney animated classics. I can quote them all pretty fairly well. Huge fan. And being an animation student really opened up my eyes to the inner workings of these Disney films that I have grown up to love and identify myself with. Kind of creepy, but I really love the Disney films. I love talking about film. I love talking about all aspects of it, and I'm just super excited to be part of this podcast. So, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I met Mason randomly through our love for animation. We started quoting randomly to each other, and it kind of just, I don't know, snowballed from there. And so when I was thinking about podcasts and who I want to do, obviously Chelsea was someone I wanted to be a part of my podcast. She's my best friend. And then I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I see sometimes they're all-girl podcasts, all-guy podcasts. So I felt like those are really imbalanced. And so I really wanted a guy to join our podcast. So, Mason, you're our token guy. But also, he loves animation.
Thank you.
He loves animation, and obviously, he's a student of animation. So he kind of can put that other side. Because Chelsea and I were more just fans and commenters.
So really, he's the only one that matters.
Yeah, it's true. You're the one
awesome.
Making it, and we're the people you need to please.
Wait, so when are we going to talk about royalties?
When you're famous, we'll talk about it, but you're just a little student right now. Okay, so about me. I'm Morgan Burt. You're interrupting. Just kidding. Okay, I'm Morgan Burt, and I've been wanting to do a podcast forever. I have always loved Disney films. I've always loved animated films. They're always the ones that I turn to, I want to watch. And I remember even when I was 12, I was really excited for, I think it was Pocahontas to come out. And I remember my cousin, I was talking to her about it, and she was 13, you know. And like back then, that's a really big deal, that year age difference. And I remember saying like, oh, I'm so excited for Pocahontas. It's going to be so good. And she's like, I can't believe you like those shows. Those are for kids. And I'm not a kid anymore.
Aww.
And I just remember thinking, no, they're not. Like, I love them. And so ever since then, I've kind of, I don't know, something in me loves animation, and I see all the animated films I can. Ultimately, I want to work in the industry one day, more on the business side, because I can't draw. I'm not an artist. I'm not a singer, actor. But anyway, so I love animation, and Chelsea and I talk about animation all the time.
All the time.
So we just decided we might as well record ourselves and let the world, if they want, hear.
It's true.
Oh, they want. They're going to want.
So we decided to name the podcast the Rotoscopers Podcast, and that's probably a really dorky name. And a lot of people, every person that I've told so far, oh, that's cool. What's that?
Yeah, so, what is that?
I'll let Mason explain, I guess.
Okay, so why the Rotoscopers? Well, rotoscoping, it's an animation term going back to the Disney classics era. Rotoscoping is a term that uses real life as a reference for your animation. So in rotoscoping, you would project film of a live-action sequence onto a pane of glass, and then the animators would trace over it, giving their animation a more lifelike appearance. It's quick, It's simpler. Some may argue that it doesn't give as much life to your animation. To me, chess is an important part of animation as any other element. You've got rotoscoping. You also have the motion capturing that you see in animated movies. My argument is that they're both basically tools to get a desired outcome. And we picked that name. Well, Morgan, do you want to explain why you picked that name?
Yeah, we picked the name because I wanted a name, obviously, that related to animation in general. I didn't necessarily want Disney or DreamWorks, because there's a lot of podcasts out there that are really, Disney-centric or really focused on certain things. So I wanted it to be broad to animation in general. And two, all the good animation names were taken.
Don't say that.
Well, some of, the cool ones that I really wanted. One I wanted Fanimation, the Fanimation podcast, but that's a ceiling fan website. So they took it.
What a waste.
I know, what a waste of it. So I'm really bummed. So eventually I decided on something that no one else had. And so I really liked that it related to, rotoscoping is something that's used in all forms of animation. And essentially that's what we do in this podcast, is we're not actually creating from memory. We're not creating new stuff. We're kind of going over it just as the artist would trace over, the live action. We kind of trace over every detail of the movies as we talk about them and go through them on the rotoscopers. So that was kind of a cool name.
Makes sense.
Oh, good. And you're the only one that matters.
And I'm sure Fanimation is going to be suing us soon. But,
maybe we'll buy about a business one.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, cool. So, let's go on to the news. So right now there's not a lot of news going on in animation, so I thought it'd be good to review our thoughts on the films for 2011 really quick. Since this is our first episode, we'll kind of talk about those, and then we'll talk about what's coming up in 2012. So, what were your guys' favorite film of 2011 and your least favorite? So we'll talk about our favorites first.
I would say, for me, Rio was one of my favorites. Also, because I spent a bunch of time in Brazil, and so I'm a little bit biased in that sense, yes.
Yes.
But it was a great film. I really enjoyed it. It was very cute, it kept my attention quite well. So that was one of my favorites.
What about you, Mason?
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Well, I only saw a couple of these movies, seeing as my income is fairly limited as a college student. I saw Rango, I saw Cars 2, I also saw Lion King in 3D, the re-release. I was really impressed with the 3D re-release of The Lion King. It had been a while since I'd seen it, and at the time I was studying 2D animation at Brigham Young University, and I remember seeing it and commenting on the layout, the backgrounds of each scene, and also the animation, and it has definitely stood up against time, and is definitely still a quality movie. Besides the voices and the acting, the artwork for Lion King is just amazing, and seeing it in 3D was even better. I saw the first 3D movie I saw last year was Thor. It was quite disorienting with the whole 3D effect, in my opinion. disorienting movie in general. But Lion King, it seemed to really fit the whole 3D perspective. I also saw Rango. It was really good. I really liked how the animators made such a crazy cool atmosphere with the world of Rango. The texturing and lighting was very good, very effective. All the characters were super ugly. Have you ever seen the movie?
I didn't see Rango.
Nor did I.
I really want to see Rango. Ever since it came out, it's been one of the ones I wanted to see and just never got around to it.
It's a good technical movie. And back to the characters, all of the characters are so ugly because they're in this dusty old Wild West town that they have created. And they're so ugly, but at the same time, they're super appealing because the texturing is so finely detailed and the lighting is so dynamic. It really points towards an Old West type of movie. And I really liked it from an animation standpoint. The story was pretty good. Johnny Depp was, in my opinion, his lines, his audio and his dialogues were pretty annoying in the movie. But, you know, that's just kind of the Johnny Depp vibe. But all in all, I liked the movie very much. The one film I was disappointed in was Cars 2. I don't know if y'all agree or not.
I totally agree.
Oh, yeah, Cars 2.
It was so disappointing.
I didn't have much anticipation going into it, so it met my expectations, I guess.
Well, excellent.
Cars 2 tried to... It was a spy movie. You had international, you know, trips on airplanes, and you had epic car chases around the world, and you had international spy rings, and you had launchers and oil slicks, and just so much action. If you're... It had a lot of car violence in it for a kid's movie.
Yeah, I thought that too. I was like, what the heck?
Lots of, like, time to die, Mr. Mater, and they point a laser beam at him or something like that. I was like, whoa, you know, this is a kid's movie. But all in all, I just didn't like the focus on Mater. I think they should have kept him to comic relief. Lightning McQueen, you know, besides the race that he was involved in, he was just a flat character, in my opinion. So I was quite disappointed. The animation, you know, and everything, the visuals were stunning. They were 10 times better than Cars 1, but it just lacked the heart of the first film, and that's what turned me off to it.
Yeah,
I didn't like, that was my least favorite of the year, was Cars 2, just because all those things you mentioned, I'm not a huge Cars fan to begin with, that's probably my least favorite Pixar film. I don't know, I agree with you with the Mater thing. I'm not a huge Mater fan, and it was just the Mater show.
Yeah.
And there's so much, like, Mater hick that you can stand. So, that was my least favorite movie. But my favorite movie of the year, I would have to say Tintin. I just recently saw it. It was one of the last ones released of the year. I did see Winnie the Pooh also, and that was sweet and cute, but not, you know, amazingly grandiose. Nothing revolutionary. It was a good installment in the Winnie the Pooh franchise. But Tintin, I thought it was just... It definitely was very simple and fast-paced. And the animation, you know, it was essentially CGI's version of rotoscoping, which is motion capture. So,
right.
You know, motion capture, they put people in suits, and then the actors, you know, record the dialogue, and then their motion is captured onto the computer, and then they kind of animate it from there. But most of the animation is already done because the actors have already done. And so a lot of times, you know, you kind of fall into dangerous territory when you're doing motion caption because it looks too real. It's kind of creepy. I think a lot of people think of Polar Express.
Yeah.
And there's just something off-putting because with, you know, motion capture, you kind of fall into the uncanny valley, as they call it. Anyways, but I thought this was the first motion capture film that I've seen where they did it successfully. I think they modified a lot of the main characters a bit, that they kind of were real, but they were more cartoony. Like, there was this set of detectives. They definitely had elongated noses that were more, like, caricature. And I think that kind of off-putted the realism of it. Anyways, I thought the story was really good, and just, you know, it kept me excited the whole time. I didn't see as many movies this year as I'd like to, but I'm going to, especially now that I'm doing the podcast. I think we'll all agree to that.
All right.
Okay.
Yep. We have an obligation now.
Our clubhouse packed. So that was last year for me. It was really good.
Very good.
So, you know, speaking on that, what is going to be in store for 2012?
Okay. So let's just go through real quick. So the first one coming out pretty soon is The Secret World of Arrietty. And this is from a studio in Japan. It's essentially The Borrowers, just with a different name. So I haven't read the books. I'm not too big on Japanese animation. I'd probably see it, but what are you guys' thoughts?
I'll probably see it. I was a fan of the books. I don't remember them, like word for word, obviously, but I remember liking them growing up, and so I'll probably end up seeing it.
I, for one, see the Secret World of Arrietty. I'm excited about it. I like the studio that's doing it. They also did Princess Mononoke. They did Spirited Away, which is an amazing movie. My opinion on Japanese animation is that sometimes it can get really intense and really, just really crazy. I tend to lean more towards American animation. But this is very friendly Japanese animation. I guess you could put it that way. It's not as intense, but it's still an art form, and it's still beautiful. I saw the previews for it when I was going to see another movie. I forget what it was, but I saw the previews for it. Amy Poehler is doing the voice of one of the characters, and I love her, and I think it's going to be a good film. They put a lot of adventure into the Borrowers universe, and I think it's going to work out. I'm definitely excited for this movie.
Cool. Yeah, I actually am too, so which is a good thing. The
That's
ones
a good way.
That Mike Miyazaki puts out are quite well produced. Okay, so next one coming up a bit after that is Dr. Seuss's The Lorax. That's by Illumination Entertainment. I'm not a huge Dr. Seuss fan, but I will see it. It does look interesting from the preview I saw.
I everything that I've ever seen about this book or anything just to me has like a moral written all over it. And I'm just not a fan of movies or anything where it just like they spoon feed you the moral throughout the entire thing. So, I mean, it's a good concept and everything, but it's just like, I want to decide that I like, you know, trees on my own. Decide this on my own, not them like telling me this huge long story about these different trees that get cut down and now it's no longer there. But you know, it looks kind of cool. Like the Dr. Seuss adaptations from what I've seen have been pretty good, so you never know, it might turn out to be something good.
Well this movie is really new territory for me. I'm completely unfamiliar with about.
What is it about? So we have this city or this town or whatever, they've basically turned everything into plastic or paved
over.
Yeah, everything is artificial and they've been trained to like it and or not think outside the box. There's a girl who says, "Hey, look, this is a picture of a tree," and they get all like they get all excited about this. What is this thing they call a tree that lives and grows and is not plastic? So he ends up going on this little adventure, meets this, you know, this short, you know, little monster who has the voice of
Danny DeVito.
And
who's
just,
fabulous.
All right.
And I just think of little Phil.
Oh, boy.
I know.
Like
I do.
Like orange Phil.
Oh, boy.
I do. I think a lot of Hercules in that moment. So he just talks about how these trees, you know, they used to be there, but then they cut them all down and build up a town that didn't need anything that would grow or that would die. And so... But then the kid is on a quest at this point in time to raise so that everybody can know about that, you know what, we have trees, we can plant them, we can be real. And so, I don't know, it's just, like I said, I understand. I like the concept. I like trees. I do.
Do you?
I do. But I don't want them to be spoon-feeding me this moral for an hour and a half, you know.
So, we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably don't need to see the movie if you already love trees. You know, this is...
Well, we'll see.
Well, like, sounds,
when it comes out, we'll give our reviews on it.
Yeah.
What were you
going to
say?
Sounds fascinating. Yeah.
Hey, at least this is one that like you can read the book beforehand, and it's not that
That's
big.
True.
It's not that big of a task.
True.
It'll take 10 minutes.
Unless you overanalyze anything, in which yeah. case Dr. Seuss can be very deep.
Yeah. We'll hold that off for the college courses.
There you go.
Okay, so next one, I'm going to do these two together. Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted by DreamWorks. So there's that, and there's also Ice Age Continental Drift. Now, is that 3 or 4 for them?
That'll be 4 for Ice Age.
Okay, 4 for Ice Age, 3 for Madagascar. So what do you think for the 3 and the 4-quels?
4-quels. We're now at 4-quels in this beautiful age we live in.
Land of Boy. It's like the Land Before Time series.
No.
No, there can only be one Land Before Time. Actually, there are 27 Land Before Time, but there can only be one Land Before Time franchise. Well, listen, Madagascar 1 was such low quality, but I think people liked it because it was so slapstick and so over the top. You could compare it to Emperor's New Groove and ridiculous humor, except Disney's better. I was entertained by Madagascar 2. You had already established, you know, what the characters are all about, and you put them into crazy situations. One of Bernie Mac's last films, heaven bless him. I don't know. Probably not going to see it. Madagascar 3, probably not going to see it unless... No, I'm not going to... Probably not going to see it.
Wow.
Ice Age Continental Drift. I am a huge... I'm a big fan of the Ice Age movies. I like the first one the best. You know, you started with Ice Age, and there was that conflict, but then the rest of the movies were just all about these geologic influences or catastrophes that affect prehistoric life. You know, you have the meltdown in one, you had the dinosaurs emerging in the third one, and we have continental drift, so... introducing the kids to, you know, the exciting world of plate tectonics as it applies to the Ice Age universe. I hate to be cynical, but, like, what's next? Next summer it's going to be Ice Age. We all evolved. The end, you know? No more catastrophes can affect us, so it's evolved into mammals.
Yeah.
The end, kids. Go home.
Yeah.
Okay.
I read a book on the life of Walt Disney, and it talked about there was this one time where one of the biggest hits that they had was the Three Little Pigs. And everyone just loved this song that was there. It was just, you know, it was the very first song that Disney put out as far as their music selection, because it was such a hit in this movie. Then everybody was just like, they want more pigs. You know, everybody wants to hear more about these pigs. And then, like, you got Roy Disney was like, give them the pigs. They want it, you know. And Walt's just like, you can't beat pigs with pigs.
Like, pigs, well, give them pigs. That's in the pig.
I can't beat pigs with pigs.
I've always taken that to heart, because you just can't beat something with the same thing. So, you know, I think the only multiple movies that I actually really thought were better and better each time were part of the Toy Stories. But everything else is just kind of like, you can't beat pigs with pigs. Like, they just keep trying to reinvent the same thing over and over and over. And like you said, it's like, how many things can we throw at these kids, you know, to be able to, to let's learn and grow together, you know? I don't know. I'm not much of a fan, but you never know. I might end up seeing them in my house on DVD, you know,
because
my sister will end up buying it, and I'll end up getting, you know, having it around. So you never know.
Okay. So the next one is by Aardman Animation. It's called Pirates Band of Misfits. And that's the company that they do the claymation. They did Chicken Run, Flushed Away, Wallace and Gromit, all those really good films.
Very good.
Yes. Very good. Anyway, so this one's coming out probably next few months, and actually it's probably the one that's more newsworthy right now. There's kind of some drama with their trailer.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
So in the trailer, there's a scene that where the captain is demanding gold from this captured ship. Only, you know, then one of the crew members says, oh, well, you know, this is a leper boat. They shoot to all the crew members and, you know, one's arm falls off. It's kind of funny. Anyways, there's a bunch of leprosy groups that are now kind of protesting it because it's discriminating against those who suffer from leprosy. So, and then Aardman, of course, agreed to take the scene out. And I'm kind of disappointed at this because it just seems like so many things are politically correct nowadays that soon we won't be able to do anything because we're going to offend someone. I mean, what are your thoughts? Like, I don't want to get too political, but
I want to know how big is the leprosy colony is now.
Well, does it matter what size of it?
I'm sure there's some Facebook groups. You can see how many subscribe to this.
I didn't realize that it was such a big thing still.
Agreed. I don't know. I thought it was just kind of ridiculous in a way. Like, I understand why, and maybe the way they put it maybe was offensive, but that's comedy, I feel.
Yeah, to me it's comedy.
It just reminds me, I heard this story of this high school that they, you know, the kids, they got together, they got to pick their new mascot name. And so everyone voted, and the name they picked was the Cougars. And the school board turned it down because they said it would be offensive to a certain group of women, old women who live a certain lifestyle.
Oh, jeez.
AKA Cougars. And so they couldn't name their school the Cougars because it might offend, like, legitimate Cougars.
God.
And I just think it's hilarious. I don't know. I think sometimes we take things too seriously.
I want to be the Cougars anyway.
Yeah, anyways. Okay, so next one is Brave. I think this is one of the more anticipated ones because, at least for me, anything Pixar comes out with, it's fantastic. It's high quality.
Seriously.
Great story. You know, they believe in not putting a story out unless it's a great story behind it and really developed. So I personally call this the Scottish Mulan.
Scottish Mulan.
It is.
Like it.
So what are you guys...
She's got the horse. She's got the, you know, the fate of, like, being able to wield a sword of some kind. You know, that's pretty sweet.
So what do you guys think about it? Excited?
Oh, I'm so excited. If you had the chance to change your fate, would you?
Nah.
Nah.
That's why they're not making a movie about us.
So great. I was taking a 3D graphics course. It was everything 3D animation besides animation back in the spring, and my professor was so excited about it. He showed us some stills from it. The animation is going to be top-notch, as Pixar always is, you know, the fluidity, the quality of it. Pay attention to the textures of the movie. It's something that Pixar's never attempted before. You know, Pixar has this kind of way that they depict humans. You know, it's kind of the Incredibles, mm-hmm. you know, their universe, their human beings that they modeled and textured. And you go on to Andy and then Andy's mom that she saw in Toy Story 3. Lots of human interaction in that movie. So you kind of see this pattern with Pixar movies. This is something completely different. The texturing and the blending of the colors is so soft and so... It's so fantasy-like that I'm just so excited for this. And I'm sure the story is going to be amazing, as always.
Yeah.
Once again, my animation standpoint, I'm super excited for it. It's going to be a different but fresh film for Pixar, I believe.
Yeah, I really like that what Pixar does is they knew the limits of the technology and they worked with it. Mm-hmm. You know, Toy Story, you can't do humans.
Yeah.
Let's keep them in the background. Yeah, but we can do plastic really well and it looks great, you know. And so then they kind of move on and they did kind of bugs, you know, and then kind of moved to water and fish in that world. And then Incredibles, they dabbled with humans and, you know, so on and so forth. So I think now they're kind of ready to, you know, give the human computer graphics like a real chance, like a Pixar version mm-hmm. of what human should be. So I'm excited for it. How could you not be? Especially after Cars 2. I mean, maybe they're holding out for this one. So, okay.
And, you know, there's just something good about it, about a ginger that's going to be taking fight and, you know, it's heading out. I love it.
Okay, now a ginger group is going to be offended with us for saying ginger.
I mean, go. No, let's edit it out. Okay, so I'll just go through the next ones. Paranorman by Focus Features, Hotel Transylvania by Sony Animation, and Wreck-It Ralph by Walt Disney Animation. So, any thoughts on those? I don't know too much about them. They're kind of later in the year, so a lot of stills and trailers haven't been put out yet.
But... You know, I saw the trailer for Paranorman. It looks good. It's right along the lines of, you know, Corpse Bride and Nightmare Before Christmas in terms of its darkness. Definitely creepy. I mean, you got this little kid who, from what I saw in the trailer, I'm pretty sure he can communicate with the dead. And, you know, he runs around with zombies. But it's got that kind of, that vibe where it's just, you know, it's fun scary. You know, like the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland and the Magic Kingdom. You know, they're ghouls and zombies and skeletons, but it's all in good fun. So I think it's going to be that type of movie. The songs they played during the trailer was really interesting. I think it's going to be cool. I'll probably go see it. Looks like a good, fun, scary movie.
Cool. And the next last one is Rise of the Guardians. That's by DreamWorks. Rise of the Guardians essentially and is about...
It's not about those Gahool owls again, is it?
No. I didn't see that movie, but wasn't that what that one was called? Rise of the Guardians? Or the Guardians of...
Legend of the Guardians.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
See, there's a rise, there's a legend, there's an
there
order.
There'll be a fall. But Rise of the Guardians, this is sort of kind of about all the mythical creatures of the holidays. So it's about Santa.
Right.
It's about the Easter Bunny. It's about, I guess, all of those and conflict that arises between those. So
conflict like Santa Claus versus the Easter Bunny?
I don't know. I've kind of forgotten what it's about, but I know they're all involved. So it kind of, to me, is like, oh, this is one of those movies that, you know how Harry Potter has like one scene about Christmas in it?
Right.
And then the ABC Family, like they play it as their 25 days of Christmas every year because it's like, oh, it's a
brother.
Christmas movie. You know, and there's like Halloween movies like Hocus Pocus that always gets airtime. Like,
right.
I think this one will be one of those. You know, because like, oh, we got Easter, we got Cupid.
Just throw it in there, whatever
like,
time of the
every
year.
Every holiday, like all, you know, this will just get like massive airtime, but I'm kidding, but we'll see. I don't know. I think it'll be a good year for animation, so I'm excited.
This will be a good year.
I think so too.
So okay, overall thoughts, it's going to be good? Better than 2011?
Couple of unwanted sequels in there. Boy, we really ripped apart those three or four quotes. But it looks like there's something for everyone this year. A lot of original films and... yeah, it's looking good for animation. I'm excited.
Cool. I am too. Okay, now we're going to go on to our main discussion, which is Beauty and the Beast. So every episode, we're going to cover a movie, you know, whether this is one that's just been released or one that's been released in the past, and we're going to review it, we're going to talk about it, dissect it, talk, you know, everything about it. So these are going to be everything from Disney to Don Bluth to DreamWorks. So yeah, so our first one's going to be Beauty and the Beast, solely because that just came out a few weeks ago in the 3D re-release.
3D.
Woo. Which was very awesome. So Chelsea and I saw it in 3D. Mason, you didn't.
I didn't, unfortunately. That's okay. I plan on it, though.
That's okay. But you have seen Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, I have.
We might have to kick you. We might have to kick you off the podcast. Okay,
oh, gosh.
So just some facts about Beauty and the Beast. So it was released November 22nd, 1991, way back 20 years ago. It was directed by Gary Truesdell and Kirk Wise.
It was 3 years old.
And music was by Howard Ashman and Alan Menken, so those definitely are the go-to Disney guys. Total, domestically in the U.S., it grossed $145 million. And then worldwide, including all the re-releases, it's at $410 million. Nearly, probably $411 or more, since it's kind of a running total. This was Disney's 30th animated feature. So kind of to put it into perspective, Tangled and Winnie the Pooh. Tangled was 50th and Winnie the Pooh was the 51st. Kind of a little bit past the midway point. And so this was part of the Disney Renaissance. I think Little Mermaid definitely kicked that off and kind of brought back, you know, freshness in Disney animation, excitement, revamped the whole animation department. We'll talk about what it was nominated for a little bit later. Although it is important to note that it was the first animated film ever to be nominated for Best Picture. So normally that never had happened, and I think it should have won. It lost to Silence of the Lambs. Which,
oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm not so much a fan, but oh, I know a lot of people are. But that really shows a lot for this film for it to get noticed by the Academy, because I think there is kind of a bias towards animated films. You know, they're for kids.
Right.
You know, it's not good enough quality-wise to be put up there, so...
The acting, these thespians don't have their way of, you know, showing off, so, you know.
Lots of times Beauty and the Beast have been tried to be made by Walt Disney himself, you know, 1930s through the 50s. They kept trying to make it, but the screenwriters and, you know, the story department, it was kind of shelved because they could never figure out how to get the story to work for animation. So I'm kind of glad they did, because I love the movies that Walt was involved in, but... I can't imagine any other version of Beauty and the Beast.
It was just amazing.
I mean, I guess there are other versions out there.
Oh, there are. Just look at Netflix.
Yeah. So actually, I tried to watch one of those like horrible.
Never mind. It was just so well done.
Don't call them horrible. Call them underdeveloped.
Yes. There you go.
Yes. Minimal budget. Okay. So let's just go talk about whatever. We'll kind of do a free-for-all discussion. So what are your original thoughts? Like, when you first saw the movie, what did you think about it?
I can't remember my overall thoughts when I first saw it. I do remember freaking out as a kid when I saw the Beast come in on Maurice in the castle for the first time, you know.
Freaking out in a good way or bad way?
Oh, bad way, man. He was scary.
He's all
draped in shadow and his teeth were gleaming. And he was like, so you want to stare at the Beast, do you? And I'm like, no, I don't want to stare at him. You know, Maurice's reaction and the music, man, it just... gave you this first impression of the Beast, which I think is what they wanted, you know. Of course, that's how that character saw himself at the beginning, and it was very effective. I remember Gaston being such a jerk.
Awesome jerk.
He's an awesome jerk, but man, he's a jerk. And I liked it. I remember laughing at the banter between Cogsworth and Lumiere, you know, your comic relief character, and but an overall magical movie that was thrilling at the same time, you know, great Disney movie, a heartwarming moment.
For sure. I had about the same reaction. I remember that was one of the very first movies that I remember seeing in theaters. And I just remember that part where he first, like, comes in and, like, his cape, like, goes across the screen, like, when Maurice is walking in. I would freak out and I, like, turn and, like, hide my face. I'm like, no, he's gonna kill me.
Yeah, I mean, it's classic monster footage in a movie. You don't see him all at once. And,
yeah.
And then, there he is. Very effective.
You know, as a five-year-old, that's like, you know, run away. But I remember it ended up being one of my absolute favorite movies.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. What about you, Morgan?
I love Beauty and the Beast. It's not my favorite. I think, you know, when you ask people, what are your favorite Disney movies? I think a lot of people, it's Beauty and the Beast or Little Mermaid. And overwhelmingly, a lot of people, Beauty and the Beast. I love it, but I definitely think it's one of my top, you know, top 10, top five. And Aladdin is my personal favorite, which we'll get to one of these days. but this movie really can do no wrong. Everything about it, the music, I mean, you still quote and sing the music. I'm a fan. I saw it in 3D, so I guess that's not my original thoughts, but having seen it in 3D was a different experience because I noticed a lot of things that I hadn't noticed before. I don't know if it was the 3D or the fact that it was on the big screen, but I just noticed a lot more things in the background, a lot more of the layouts, background characters. I thought it was fabulous. I really like the 3D, both for Lion King and for Beauty and the Beast. The 3D for traditionally animated movies, at least the way that they do it, comes off to me like the multiplane camera. The multiplane camera was where they had this camera, so it was vertically pointing down. And then they had all these layers of, you know, grass in the front, trees in the background, then main characters and mountains in the background. So kind of gave this all this dimension. Yeah. I know Sleeping Beauty was done with that. A lot of Disney invented it, so he used it all that he could. And I feel 3D kind of feels multiplane to me. Like I feel, you know, especially that opening scene where they show the castle in the background and the music starts playing.
Right, right.
You know, you see the grass and then suddenly, you know, the next thing that pops out is that deer that's right there. Mm,
that I never saw before.
Yeah, never. And then there's the rose bush, like, very in the front. And just, they feel very defined, each layer. Not that they kind of blend into one, but here's this layer. A few steps back is that layer. Mm-hmm. This castle, whatever. So I like it a lot because it gives me kind of that old school multiplane vibe. I think I liked it because it reminded me of those old ways.
Yeah, definitely. The multi-pane camera, yeah, you see it right at the beginning, and it makes for good 3D.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So what makes this movie, maybe we've already discussed this, what makes this movie so memorable or classic?
It's the Beast. To me, it's the Beast. He's such a well-done character. I've been watching some clips, getting ready for this pilot episode. Man, what a character. Like we discussed, he's frightening at first. He's scary to look at. He used a variety of you know, the parts of animals to create his look. And so what you're looking at first, and you're frightened of course, and that's how everybody reacts to the Beast. But at the same time, you know, in classic Disney magic, that he is, you know, he's a man. He's a man who's fallen in love, and he's trying to get Belle to fall in love with him, you know, for the curse's sake. He gets someone to fall in love with him, and so you get to see this journey of his struggle, his insecurity, his awkwardness. You know, he tries to come to dinner with him, and his reaction to her reaction, and it's just, it's funny. I know what it's like to get turned down from a date, you know? And you're like, what?
Not you.
Can you believe that? Okay, differently, or maybe if I, you know, act like more of a gentleman, you know, no, thank you. And then you're like, what? And you really see this vulnerable side of the Beast as he falls in love. Man, it's such a great character. You know, the voice, it was melded with, cat, you know, wild cat growling and, you know, jackals barking. I don't know, but it disguised his voice. It made him beastly. But at the same time, you see this warm, tender side, made the character both imaginative, you know, Disney-wise, but also close to us on a personal level, at least to us guys, you know, who have gone through those struggles. Not that I have, like, a curse and I'm trying to get someone to fall in love with me, but
maybe
at the same time, you know, there's an urgency for all of us, you know, all of us guys and girls, you know, to be with someone, and overall is a very great character of the Beast.
Yeah, for me, I think the music, obviously, was the most, definitely the most memorable for me. My background, obviously, in music, and so it's been something that I have just heard over and over and over in my life. Beauty and the Beast was actually received a lot of Oscar nominations for all of its music, including Best Picture. Well, we know Best Picture, but Best Original Score and Best Sound. It was nominated 3 times for its song, Beauty and the Beast. It ended up winning 2 of them, which was Best Original Score and Best Original Song for the Beauty and the Beast song. You know, those songs are just so done. Everybody knows them because they're just so incredibly well written. I remember my brother and I, we did this, it was like a summer musical production, and where they would like take different songs from different movies or different plays, and then we would all like just play and do a reenactment of these parts. And I remember they ended up doing the one song where they're going through where there goes the baker with his tray like always, the same old bread and rolls to sell. And so they did that song and we're all going and singing along, and I remember my part was like I got to go out in front and I was just like, I need six eggs. And my brother, that's too expensive.
The baguettes, hurry up.
Exactly. I mean, it just, that was a huge memory for me to be able to do that. But it was also, it goes to show you the amazing writing that was written into all these songs. Howard Ashman is probably one of my absolute favorite lyricists. Just the way he wrote things was just awesome. A lot of alliteration, a lot of just very punny type words mm-hmm. that he used. And it was just, we saw that in A Little Mermaid and again here in Beauty and the Beast, which really added that extra level of entertainment.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, this movie's obviously called Beauty and the Beast. And, you know, Mason talked a lot about how the Beast is actually a focal point for this. And I think Belle is too. A lot of girls really look up to Belle and they kind of see themselves in her. You know, she's brown hair, brown eyes. You know, she's not the blonde, you know, babes who are, you know, going after Gaston, which I think a lot of girls kind of see. I have to look something like that. I have to be like that. And so it was kind of refreshing that Belle was all around normal and, mm-hmm. you know, completely grounded. And yet people still thought her as kind of a whack job or kind of weird, more her dad wacky, but just something was odd about her. And so I don't know. It really kind of is one of those characters that you see yourself in. You kind of portray yourself onto Belle. As a girl, I don't know about you, Mason, but as a girl, you kind of...
A beast than a Belle.
More of a beast. Okay, well, I'm good. Glad about that. So, to me, there's kind of that balance between it's about Belle, it's about Beast, and then the music all ties it together, mm-hmm. you know, with a little bow on top. Favorite songs? What songs stand out to you? Chelsea kind of talked about them, but what's important about the songs here that make it so different?
Man, well, the broad range of amazing songs in this movie is considerable. You know, you've got Be Our Guest, you have The Tale's Old as Time, Beauty and the Beast song, which is magical, it's gentle, you know, it's beautiful. The song where Belle and the Beast are kind of going through their kind of dating period, you know, where they're like realizing that they like each other, you know, there must be something there that wasn't there before. It's good, it's a good duet, you know, it's always fun when you get all the characters singing. One song that always stood out to me, maybe it's because I'm a guy, I don't know, is I love the mob song, I think it's called. You know, it's the...
Me too! Where
Gaston is rallying the villagers to go after the Beast, and of course it's all about his motive of revenge on the Beast for being close to Belle, and I love Disney villain songs. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Are they not just...
No, they're so good.
They're very needed.
Yeah, you've got Scar, you've got Ursula, you've got Governor Cliff. Yeah, Jafar. And it's just, it's so fun. They draw you into the minds of the villain in this fun Disney way. You get to see their funny side. You know, Ursula, she's sassy. She's outrageous. Scar, he's got this notion of grandeur. You know, Governor Radcliffe, you know, he's got the pomp and he's got he's going for this domination, this cultivation of this new world. Gaston goes from the oafish suitor to this really sinister guy in the second act of the film, and Kill the Beast, you know, shows off, well, the message, you know, the big pounding line that you hear over and over is Kill the Beast, you know. Definitely builds tension before the film's fantastic climax, and just the beat of it, it's just catchy to me. You know, it's foreboding, it's you know, something big is going to happen. You almost don't need the thunder and lightning, you know, afterwards to like cue that someone's going to go down at the end of this.
Something's going down.
Well, you know what's interesting about Gaston is he actually kind of has three singing moments. Mm-hmm. You know, the very beginning in Belle's song, where he's talking about one day he'll marry Belle and she's the girl he picks.
That is true.
And then there's, you know, the song, you know, titled Gaston, mm-hmm. and it's about him. He sings in that, and it's Le Fou mostly, and saying how everyone will want to be you, you're the best guy in town, and then, you know, ultimately for the mob song. So it's kind of interesting. He has quite a range mm-hmm. in this.
Yeah, and you see that a lot in Disney films. The villain, you know, you get to see their personal side, which is usually, you know, comical. And then towards the end, you see that they're completely sinister and crazy evil.
And the funny thing is, I like Gaston for who he is and for how pompous he is and kind of, you know, like, he has a lot going for him. He's, you know, like, very talented, and he's a great wrestler. He's chest hair.
And yeah. All those eggs he used to eat as a kid. Now he's the size of a barge.
You know, he kind of, like, you know, is that guy who always has everything going for him. You know, the girls are fawning on him and love him. Then even through that, there's flaws that he has.
Well,
and
he's got
there became, you know, they're noticeable from the very beginning, but for some reason I still like him because of those.
Yeah.
Like a lot. Like I hate Gaston, but not really. Like I really like Gaston. He's a great villain.
It's true.
And he's got this big conflict because he wants this one girl. It's like, it's the only girl in town that doesn't want him. And so he's attracted to that because he's this, you know, He-Man dominating character.
Well, he's a hunter. It's all about getting the prize and, like, putting it up on your wall.
That's true.
Yep, so I guess there's kind of that analogy there where, you know, he has the bear rug, he has the moose, he has this. He probably has, like, really rare things on his wall, and he could get those three girls if he really wanted to. I think their name is the Bimbettes.
What?
I think that's what they're called, but they're like Babettes. It's something funny like that.
Babettes.
But he can have them, and he probably has. Honest.
Hey, it's Disney.
Well, it's like a whatever.
Not all pink flowers.
But you know, there's that bell, like the prize, the gorgeous rare flower that he can't have, and so that's kind of the lure in her. But there then she doesn't want him.
So quick fun fact with the prizes that Gaston hunts during his Gaston song. When he goes on about his expectorating and he spits, if you look on the wall, there is what appears to be a frog's head, and as part of his many trophies.
Oh, really?
I saw this on Internet Movie Database, and I want to check it out for myself. So yet to be confirmed, but something to look out for in the future.
A frog face of what?
Like a frog head mounted on the wall as a trophy.
Oh, those are hard. Maybe that was one of his first finds when he was like 7.
Yeah, we're 7 months old. I mean,
he began from there.
Back when he was only, what was it, 4 dozen eggs and not 5 dozen eggs.
Okay, yes, I was right. We just looked on Wikipedia. The triplets are also known as the Bimbettes or the Babettes.
Oh my gosh.
Totally, I was right with both of them.
See, those were the good old days. You notice that a group of bimbos didn't protest the movie.
I know. But you know what? Then they would like be drawing more attention to themselves as bimbo. Like, I know that I'm a bimbo, and you're making fun of me.
Yeah. I guess that's not a group that doesn't rally together too often.
You know, you didn't have the NRA going up and be like, "That is an inaccurate portrayal of huntsmen in that movie."
Right.
Okay, so back to songs. Does anyone remember the song Human again? It was in the play. They kind of put it into a later version. Didn't make it into the original movie. Your thoughts?
I remember. Okay, so I think Human Again is okay. Like you mentioned, they put it in the DVD for one of the anniversary re-releases. I think it's when they were on their platinum series of re-releases. So it was the platinum edition. And so it was in the play, and the play was released, or the Broadway musical was released probably, 2 or 3 years after Beauty and the Beast? I think 94. And obviously it got a lot of reception. So when they re-released it, they animated the scene and then shoved it in the film.
That's a good
one. Like, this really bothered me at the time because you'd watch this DVD and you couldn't watch the original version without Human Again. Like, the only way to watch this was with the Human Again part added.
Something smells of George Lucas in there.
Yeah, he just kind of, like, does whatever he wants.
He had something to do with this, I just know it.
Hey, maybe he's a Disney fan. So I personally would have liked it if they had two versions of that. They didn't kind of, like, force it down your throats. Because the animation was so jarring and different. I mean, even the characters, even though they were voiced by the same actors, like, they just kind of had a different... The purpose of these, you know, minor characters wasn't to be in the spotlight. And wasn't... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I felt like the portrayal of them changed a bit.
Right. And I know they're longing to go from inanimate kitchenware to... Well, not so inanimate, but, you know, from kitchenware to real people. But it wasn't a huge plot point. It was just kind of a, you know, effect of the curse.
Yeah. And the animation in that, like, really bothered me because it was clearly technology had improved. It wasn't the same animators who did it. So with 2D animation, I feel it's kind of easy to see who animated what scene, like, if you're really paying attention. And it just, it didn't meld well together. It didn't flow. It just kind of was like, oh, here's that scene. All right, back to the real movie.
Yeah, the way I see it, it's like, there's a reason they cut that out. Like,
very well said.
There's just a reason that they did that. So why are we trying, like, why do they force us to look at what they already cut out in the first place?
Yeah, agreed.
You know, but I love the play. I was kind of young when I saw the play originally, but I still remembered it really, really well. And when I lived in New York for a summer, I remember seeing signs everywhere because it had been on Broadway for many, many years. I think ever since 94. And because it had made a lot of money there because it's such a wonderful family thing. Everyone was able to go see it. I never really had the desire to go see it at that time just because I felt like I already saw it. So it's like, oh, cool. It's great. Love it. But then I remember seeing when they were going to be putting up the new Little Mermaid on Broadway. And so they were closing it down and I was like, oh, that's sad. You know, finally they're closing this down, you know, that has been on Broadway for so long. But yet I still didn't like feel that need to go see it. I was like, well, you know,
whatever. We'll see it on tour.
Yeah. We'll see it on tour when it comes back, you know. But then when I got home, I was so upset, like so upset because I looked back and I saw that for a few months, the very end of the run that it had on Broadway, they had Donny Osmond playing Gaston. And I was like,
Whoa.
He was a fabulous Gaston.
I know. I was like, you have to. Oh, I was so mad.
He sang Shang.
I know. In Mulan. It's like Donny Osmond. And I realized that he wasn't going to sing any of his other hits. You know, there's no puppy love in this one. But, you know, it was like Gaston as Donny Osmond. That's just classy. And I was really sad that I wasn't able to go see that. But, you know.
Well, I saw Donny Osmond in concert a few months ago. Uh-huh. And I only wanted to go because I wanted to hear him sing I'll Make a Man Out of You. That's the only thing I wanted to hear. I didn't really know his other songs. Like, I knew Joseph, Amazing Colors Dream Coat. I wasn't around in the 60s when he was, you know, the 60s version of Bieber. So I was like, okay, I know he was in Beauty and the Beast. I don't know if he'll sing Gaston's song or one of those because they're not so widely known or like appealing in a concert setting with 60-year-olds.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to sing Kill the Beast.
They throw the pitchfork to him on stage. No, but he sang I'll Make a Man Out of You, and I was the only person standing up and cheering during that whole time, and he sang.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm dead serious. Like, I was too far back, he couldn't see me, but I was, like, fangirling out. And he sang Beauty and the Beast, like a really lovely rendition of Tale as Old as Time.
But he's got an amazing voice.
Yeah. So that was good, and that was appealing to me. But anyways, that's our Donny Osmond Beauty and the Beast tie-in.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, so any thoughts on animation? I mean, now that we have our animation major here, you definitely can talk away.
Pre-animation, yeah. It just goes back to, you know, the 2D aspect. It's got beautiful layouts. The backgrounds and everything are so detailed. You get a broad range of kind of animation. I really like the intro where you see the stained glass windows that portray the introduction to the fairy tale. There's actually a scene that they made, that they animated into an actual movie in the sequel that Beauty and the Beast, The Enchanted Christmas, you see that, but there's just something so, you know, so mysterious and so appealing about the stained glass sequence. Mm-hmm. Apart from that, you have,
which,
of course,
can I just say,
go for it.
This is unrelated to animation, but what was the witch's deal, or the sorceress, or the whoever she was?
You know, I was watching the intro today, and I was like, you know, how come you never see more of the Enchantress? Why doesn't she come back, like, in the end and say, you know, you have passed the test?
You know? Yeah, and, like, turn it into a crystal rose that he can, you know, watch forever. Well, I don't know, just, like, what was her gripe, like, that she had with him? Just like, he's a bad guy. I put it upon myself to teach him a lesson.
I am.
Maybe there's some sort of, like, guild of enchantresses and fairies that are, like, sent out. They have some sort of information network. You know, they probably take your personal information from your computer and determine if you are ready for a life-changing test or not.
Yeah. Well, here's another conundrum that I have. He's the prince, right?
Right.
He...
Yes.
Did he...
Yes, yes.
I mean, obviously he had subjects and people that he was prince over.
You know...
What? Did they just, like, forget about him? Like, the townsfolk, was that part of the enchantment?
Maybe, yeah, part of the enchantment was that it just kind of passed on to legend or I don't know. Yeah, no explanation there. I got nothing.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, obviously it's not enchanted so much like Hogwarts, where if a muggle comes by it, you can't, it just says, oh, this is a scary old building, please go away. Mm-hmm. And then the muggle says, okay, and they wander away, you know. But this, you know, Maurice and Belle, they can just walk up and they see the castle, they can enter. I mean, obviously, you have to have women enter the castle if you want them to fall in love with him.
Right.
But I don't know. I just always bothered me that what happened to his people? Didn't they worry about their beloved prince? But maybe he was so revolting that he passed on to oblivion.
Or maybe his castle is so large that just everyone worked there. I mean, you look at the last scene, there's a whole bunch of people there.
No, you look in Be Our Guest and think of all the forks.
I know.
All the plates.
All the silverware had to turn back into people.
Yikes.
We're talking a staff of 500 minimum, folks.
Yeah, for the one guy.
High rolling prince.
Okay, and then this is another legitimate question. Sorry, we'll go back to the other discussion about animation.
No, this is it. Go for it.
What? Okay, so I should have looked this up beforehand, but maybe you guys will know. Was his sentence that he had to be a beast for 21 years or until he turned 21?
Kind of like a Davy Jones type of thing?
Yeah,
the sentence of his transformation.
Well, because in the thing it says, you know, if he didn't find true love before his 21st year, I mean, he didn't look too young in that stained glass window, but maybe they did a great job of...
Or no, like, even the picture of him in his room.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, it's the same guy. Like, he hasn't aged at all. Like, did he just look, like, super old at puberty? Like, really young?
I don't know.
But, oh, my goodness. I never thought about that before. You know, this is kind of ruining my Beauty and the Beast experience that I've had, you know, over the years.
Dissect it. That's what rotoscoping are.
That is. We must rotoscope. Wow, I never thought of it that way. You know, maybe, I don't know. The whole Disney thing, you know, characters don't age that much, you know.
Yeah, and it says it's like 10 years we've been rusting, needing so much more than dusting.
Well, and Chip is still a kid.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know what it was? Maybe it was for 21 years he had to be a, you know, he had 21 years to do this. Otherwise, he would stay a beast forever. But everyone was essentially frozen in time.
Yeah, but then why
they didn't age, they didn't grow up, and then when they really turned back, they were back where they were.
Why would the rose be wilting after just 10 years? That's like a defective rose.
Maybe there was a time vortex. Maybe there was a time vortex floating in the glass of rose. Or am
I
getting too Star Trek
here? Take the glass off, it like takes 10 years off.
That's why he gets so mad when she lifts it up.
True.
But what have
the
you
time
done?
Vortex, no! Belle, you don't touch the time vortex!
Exactly. Oh, man.
I can see the Beast as this, like, nerd guy. No, the time vortex! No! He's a spoiled, rotten computer nerd.
I always knew he looked better as a Beast.
Anyway, but yeah, okay, so there's some definite continuity holes that we've been dissecting, you know, that we've been yanking out of this.
Yeah, I have a question. Why
we're still on conundrums.
Yeah, I'm sorry, this is my conundrum. Why in the world did he say, the quote is, she's like, you can go anywhere you want into the castle, except the West Wing. Well,
what's in the West?
It's forbidden. You know, it's like, why didn't he just say, that's my room?
All my stuff is in there. It's embarrassing.
It's true. It is quite a mess.
It is. For me, that would just be like, all right, that's your
room. That's your room. I got it.
That's your spot. I will let you.
Yeah, he made it so mysterious. Like, it's forbidden. She's like,
it's forbidden. Don't go in there, because it's forbidden, but it's right there in the west side of the castle, you know, west wing, but it's forbidden. You can't go there.
Right.
An elephant graveyard is no, you know.
Exactly.
Here, I've said too much.
But I think also that would have taken away, like, a good plot part of the story, so whatever, you know, You have to write it in for the story, whatever.
Yeah, but they had to move it along, you know.
Well,
but it was good.
Okay, back to animation.
That was a really random jump.
Yeah, this is what we do. We are the queens of tangents.
I know, it's great.
So, well, we get back to what we were talking about, but tangents, they happen, so.
Sorry, Mason.
Carry on.
And... Oh, that's fine. I studied geometry, so I know a little bit about tangents, so yeah.
Good. I'm glad that all of this is finally coming into use into your life.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming together. back to the animation. Besides the layouts and the expressive animation, I mean, it's just all in all just a beautiful movie. Technical-wise, I really don't have much to say about the movie. I do have a professor at BYU who did some animation on Beauty and the Beast. She's done some other films, so hopefully in later episodes I'll be able to interview her and we'll get to hear some insights from her. So looking forward to that. But for now, besides what I've noticed... you know, with the detail and the artwork and the expressiveness and the animation. It's pretty much it for me.
One thing, I just noticed that, I don't know if I noticed it this time, but I noticed a lot in 2D animation is that the way that the animators are set up, there's the lead animator or the supervising animator, and then he has his team. And so the lead animator does the keyframes, the really important ones, usually the facial shots or the ones that are a bit more complex. And those ones look fabulous. And then, you know, everyone else kind of gets delegated the, you know, bells in the background so you can do it when she's over there. And it was just interesting for me to watch this, and you could definitely tell, like, who animated what. The main animator for Belle was James Baxter, and then the lead animator for the Beast was Glenn Keane. And he is just, you know, an animation god to everybody, and he's fabulous. And he did Tarzan, and James Baxter, he was partly on Ariel. And so it was just interesting to me because I just, from frame to frame and scene to scene, you could just tell, like, oh, the good animator did this, and someone else did this, and someone else. It was just kind of interesting to me. It kind of, like, took away from it because I was paying so much attention to the detail in the animation and the sophistication of it.
Huh.
But there's something, like, I don't think you notice so much in CGI because animators usually animate the whole scene. So, you know, I get
right.
the whole
and
scene to do.
Yeah, you're all using the same 3D model, the same texture, so
yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, it's just a matter, you know, you can't really get that too off the model. So it was just interesting to notice it this time around, but still love the movie. All right, so what do you think about sequels? Yay, yay.
Sequels.
Well, I think we've already talked about our dislike for sequels.
In my defense... I dislike sequels just because they're so poorly done, but at the same time, they're so good.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes, just maybe because I just watched them over and over and over again, I kind of have that affinity for them, but, you know, I do like to see extensions of the character,
it's
what
true.
Happened next.
For sure.
But usually they're poorly done.
A couple hours before doing this episode, I watched a scene from The Enchanted Christmas. It's actually the scene where it was kind of a vision of Christmas past for the Beast, and he's this spoiled, rotten kid. You know, and he's like, oh, that's all you got for me for Christmas, you know. How many are there? 36, counted them myself. But, so he's this super brat. It is a different type of animation. It's that Disney sequel animation. And, I haven't read too much
into it. Shipped it out.
Yeah.
You know, it's just got this different type of look to it. And then the scene is, Forte, before he turns into the evil pipe organ, he's playing a composition that he made for him. Hey, I'd be thrilled about that. And he's like, you know, meh, you know, the Beast, the little prince. One thing to note in that scene is that he's right after that, he sees the old lady and she turns into the beautiful enchantress and the curse begins. But in that scene, he is kind of an adolescent youth. He's kind of a teenager. So maybe that, you know, that could fill in one of our conundrums there.
Yeah.
He's definitely, I'd say he looks about 15, 16 years old in that scene. That's one good thing that sequel did. I remember...
Solved it!
Yeah, thank you, sequel. I do remember Forte being... I thought he was an interesting villain. You know, he's this pipe organ, you know, and he kind of... From what I remember, you know, he kind of introduces this element of doubt into the Beast and Belle's relationship. Still subpar, and as far as the animation, you know, you'll never get a better Beauty and the Beast villain than Gaston, but interesting villain. That's the most memorable thing for me from the sequel.
I remember when it first came out, when the new sequel came out, and I was so excited for the new and extended story from before the Beast transformed back into a human, because, well, I'll be honest, I always thought he was better looking as a Beast. I mean, I guess I'm just not that big of a fan of his animated, like, self afterward, but...
He's charming.
He's
not a babe.
I give him a...
He's European.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, there
early.
You go.
Okay, hold on. You can't use that excuse because most of all the Disney princes are European.
Well, yeah.
The long hair...
And he's French.
I'm defeated.
Nah, I didn't buy the post Beast character when he's back into a prince.
Yeah, I liked him as the Beast.
Hey,
he was great as the Beast.
Who says a prince has to be good looking? Maybe that's what their point was.
The problem was he's a little too good looking. Like, you know,
chiseled jaw.
Yeah, well.
I don't know. He looks kind of girly to me. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm gonna say.
Okay, said.
Yeah, so the when it finally came out and I saw it, I was just like, eh, I gave it an okay as well. It wasn't that great, but I remember how they just used that same video many times afterward. But they didn't change the trailer for it. And so, like, every time it would come out, I thought it was, like, this new and extended scene from before he changed back. I'm like, wait, they get another one? I don't know what happened here. But... Then I remember my mom, she didn't really understand. Like, she also thought that it was this new and great thing, and she knew that we enjoyed these movies. And so for, I think, 2 Christmases in a row, we ended up getting the same video. So we
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you at all. So now we have this new thing, you know, we have 2 VHSs of this, you know, video floating around. I'm just like, ow, jeez.
Suckers.
Marketing. That's where I want to be one day.
There you go. Oh my
You'll
gosh!
Be the one selling
I'll
you
be
things.
The one selling you 2 copies of a video you don't want.
Not only were you unfortunate enough to have 1 Disney sequel in your household, but 2 of the same movie.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, man.
Good time
for sure.
So, I don't have much to say about the sequels. I remember watching one of them on YouTube, in like 14 part, and that's all I remember. So
now,
move on.
Were there other sequels besides the Enchanted Christmas?
Right, there's Enchanted Christmas, and I think there's another one. I'm positive, but it's inconsequential. We're talking about the real movie.
Oh.
Okay.
There's an ex Disney intern who's listening to this is like, well, I put my heart and soul into that. Forte was my creation.
Oh, I'm sorry, dude. Okay.
Sorry, dude.
We got your back from now on out, right?
No, we don't.
Okay, favorite quotes. I'm a big Disney quoter, and I will quote just Disney quotes even when people don't understand what I'm talking about. I think Disney and animation quotes relate to all situations. So what are some of your favorite quotes?
All right, me first.
Okay
here we go. I hope you like it here. Super, super awkward moment between the Beast and Belle. He's like in this dark, foreboding castle, and they're like, hey, come on, you gotta get this going. Say something nice to her. I hope you like it here. I just threw your father out and tried to eat him, and now I'm making you stay in here forever.
Good quote.
That's very nice.
The castle is your home now, so you can go wherever you like. Except the Wesley. What's in the...
It's forbidden!
We've already discussed that quote in length.
I mean, it's my room, I have my stuff there, and I get really crazy when people touch my stuff, okay?
I got the vortex, you know. And
my vortex is in there.
She wouldn't understand. Too geeky. Okay. I love all the lyrics to Be Our Guest, and I think we can thank Howard Ashman for that. Particularly, I love just the phrase, culinary cabaret.
Yes. Yes.
Like, there's your alliteration.
How much better of a description can you get?
Hey, it's impossible.
Which is what it was.
It was fantastic. It's amazing.
Another one I like. I think anything Gaston says is hilarious. When he, like, walks in, he's trying to, you know, he's trying to propose to her, and she's like, when she's looking at him through the thing. He's like, this is the day your dreams come true. She's like, what do you know about my dreams, Gaston? Plenty. Here, picture this. A rustic hunting lodge, my latest kill roasting on the fire, and my little wife massaging my feet. With the little ones playing on the floor with the dogs. I have 6 or 7. Dogs? No, Bell. Strapping boys like me.
Strapping boys like me. You know, Morgan, you have an impeccable Bell impression.
No. You and I should have done that scene together.
You know. Oh, I love it. Yes, Donnie, she's got some of the most outrageous quotes. Expectorating. I had to kind of look that up to, like, see what it was. But I personally like Cogsworth. He's kind of that, you know, he's kind of that wormy, you know, wormy guy. He kind of reminds me of Zazu as far as his yeah. voice, you know, his officiality, his formality. So I forget what they're doing. You know, they're trying to get Bell, they're trying to get Beast to get in good grace with Bell and suggesting what he should do to woo her. And you got Cogsworth who goes, well, there's the usual things, flowers, chocolates, promises you don't intend to keep. That promises you don't intend to keep line was apparently ad-libbed by David Ogden Steers, the voice of Cogsworth. And so I like it. It's a fun quote.
I love that quote. Like, every time you watch that, like, we watched that movie with 3D, and when that line came up, everyone just started busting up laughing because it was just really was that funny.
And you think people had seen these movies before, and so, you know, when you've seen a movie a bazillion times before, the lines get less and less funny. But that kind of shows how great the line was in the first place, you know, for it to stand the test of time.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. Lots of good quotes.
Any more?
Oh, off the top of my head. Oh, you've got your asylum director, you know, he takes in the idea of Gaston throwing Maurice in the asylum.
I love it.
Absolutely despicable. I love it. Same voice as the priest on Hunchback of Notre Dame. What was his name?
The priest? Frollo?
No, you know, the bad, you know, the bad guy. You know, the guy who's like a closet
name?
Sanctuary.
Yeah.
Same voice.
Really? Which is a great movie. I like that one. Doesn't get enough respect.
Not for me.
Oh, I think one of my favorite is when they were just like, you had the two, you had Cogsworth and Lumiere walking down the hallway with her, and she's like, oh, I'd really like to go take a look around. I've never been in an enchanted castle before. And then Cogsworth, enchanted! Who said anything about the castle being enchanted? Like,
I don't remember
and
that
he
one.
Turns to Olivia, it was you, wasn't it? I remember. I kind of figured it out on myself.
I kind of figured it out on my own.
Right.
It's a good one. And I love when Belle, she's like, Gaston, you are positively primeval. Why, thank you, Belle. Like, I don't know if he doesn't get it, or if he is actually
maybe he,
flattered
he delights
by it,
in that.
Flattered by it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
So, anyways, that's all I got for now. They're all quotable quotes.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, that's all we got, guys.
I was so glad that we were able to do this movie for our first one, because it really does start it off to a great start. One of the great Renaissance films that was done by Disney that really just started a new wave of happiness for me in my life.
Yeah, I'll say we've talked about movies from 2011, upcoming movies. There's always going to be that comparison between movies that come out now and the Disney classics. And so hopefully, you know, what we see in the future, we'll be able to match up in quality and entertainment as these Disney Renaissance animated classics do.
I completely agree. So yeah, we'll have to figure out what our next episode movie will be. I don't think it, you know, I was thinking about, oh, we could go in order. We'll start with Snow White and then pick them all from there. But that's going to be a ton of Disney movies for forever, like our first year, which really isn't fair to the rest of the animation world. So we'll be
fair to the rest of them.
But they're also good. There are lots of good ones out there. So
if you were to give Beauty and the Beast a rating, like on 5 stars, what would you give it?
Oh man, I'd give it 5 stars. Really, I mean, it's not my absolute favorite movie, but it's a amazing movie. You look at all the ratings on, you know, all the toughest critic sites on the web, and just your own recollections, and it's just this beautiful, magical, epic movie. I hate to overuse that word, but it really is this great big story, and I just think it's not a flawless movie, but you know, sometimes, you know, things are the most beautiful because they're imperfections. But this movie deserves 5 stars in my book.
I agree. It's a 5-star for me. Everything is so well done. I mean, it was nominated for Best Picture. The animation is beautiful. The story is quick and really engulfs you. The characters are well developed. You know, a lot of thought was put into this, and just having seen it in 3D with a full audience nearly 2 weeks after it was released, I mean, it really stands the test of time. Like, people are still laughing at the jokes. People are still, you know, you can learn, look around and people are smiling. And I left smiling. And I'd seen this tons of times and I was smiling and laughing and loving it still. So 5 stars for me.
Yeah, it definitely raised the bar as far as animation pictures goes. Because of that, we also have the expectations as well as the ability to see wonderful, wonderful movies that are all being brought to us because of the great predecessors before. I'm a huge fan, and I would give it a 5 stars as well.
All right. 5 all around. Yeah, if you have any thoughts on this or questions or you want to submit a comment, you can just send it to our email. It's therotoscopers@gmail.com. Or you can also send us a tweet at therotoscopers at Twitter. Or we have a Facebook fan page. Find us there. We're also on Tumblr. We're kind of everywhere. Anywhere web-wise, just look up The Rotoscopers and you'll find us. But definitely give us feedback. Rate us on iTunes. Definitely after you've listened to a few episodes, we've worked out the kinks and audio issues.
There we go.
This is the pilot episode. This is the one where we work out the kinks. We hear what the audience has to say, and then we go back and we fix it. So,
yeah, folks, this is episode 4, A New Hope. We promise that Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi will be coming soon.
Okay, perfect. Well, thanks for joining us for our first episode. If you want to catch us, you can catch us on all those things I just mentioned, but also at our individual spots. I'm Morgan_Burt at twitter.com.
And I am ChelseaRobson.blogspot.com.
And I have a Facebook.
Oh, cool.
Oh, gosh. You can find me on Facebook, Mason Smith. You can see some of my animation stuff. I'll get a domain or I'll get a site sometime.
Excellent. Okay. Well, until then, we're the Rotoscopers.
Welcome to the pilot episode of the Roto... You're laughing at me. Shut up.
Perfect. That's everything we need. Yay!
Huzzah!
Imaginary party.
Yay!
Okay, so here's what I'll do.
Back to business.
Oh, I'm so boring. I'm so mean.
End of party. Back to business. It's forbidden.
Okay, sorry. You still want a party?
I'm okay.